Hello and welcome to the Coaching Podcast, coaching for success in sport and business. Your host is Emma Doyle, the energy and high performance under pressure coach who is a world leader in unleashing human potential. Buckle up for this high octane session. Let them have it, coach.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Coaching Podcast. Today I have the pleasure of chatting to David Whedon. Coach Whedon was there on my very first day when his daughter, Sarah, shout out to Sarah Whedon, who I adore, her and I were driving her yellow Corolla manual that had struggled going up hills, and we finally made it to Deakin University, and standing there was my two course coordinators, David Parkin and David Whedon, the two Davids. And I remember, David, when you said to us, and we were all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was like, this is exactly where I meant to be in a coaching course. And you said, coaching equals people management plus teaching. And I will never forget that definition just imprinted onto my brain that day. So I can't wait to talk about that and so much more. So firstly, David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Emma. It's wonderful.
All right. And our pattern break question for you is cats or dogs? What's your take?
Dog.
Dog lover. He's a dog lover, or all the other dog lovers out there. All right. So take me back to that moment, David. I'm not sure if you'll remember it quite as clearly as what I remember it, but please explain to me what you mean by that definition, coaching equals teaching plus people management.
Well, I did physical education teaching course at Melbourne University. So I got introduced to a little bit the craft of teaching, and I did a high diploma of teaching second. So I ended up teaching a secondary school, Belmont High School in Geelong. Plus, very early on, after I'd finished at Collingwood, I was coaching major league country football at 23 years of age. So I thought, it's a bit like taking phys ed lesson. And I thought, the more I thought about it, and as I, it didn't come straight away, as I got a little bit smarter maybe, I realised that, and I started reading about other great coaches, Lombardi, Wooden, Ferguson, that coaching is teaching. And I realised that, and that's why I love it. I love it so. But it's also teaching of people management, of children, of players, of staff. It's all mixed up together. And you can be, I believe, a good people manager without necessarily being a good teacher, because teaching is the act of making learning happen. Without learning, there's been no teaching. So if you're going to be a good teacher, you have to be a good people manager. And the common thing, the base of it, is empathy, understanding the perspective of the other person. And once you can understand, you might like it, you might not even agree with it, but you know what drives them. I read something the other day, or I heard it, that you have to go fishing because you have to give fish bait. So when you talk to someone, you've got to find out what their bait is. What do they want? What individual or team goal, what they want? And if it's for the good of the team, you as a teacher can help them reach that particular goal. It's an act of aiding people, to me, reach a particular goal. And it might be just to keep a game, get a game, win the best and fairest, whatever. But you've got to know them to find out what they really want out of sport.
So do you think empathy can be learned? Or how does a coach listening to this, how can they improve in the art of empathy?
Well, I think there's no course on it, I don't think. You have to listen. The first thing you have to do is listen. Don't talk. Listen. Ask questions and listen to the answers, because what's really behind what they're saying is often the truth. And I think my wife said, you're oversensitive, whereas I sort of pick up on people's vibrations. And I think teaching, for example, I always felt sorry for the kid who couldn't keep up with the work or didn't understand it. And I thought, you don't understand it, and I'm going to try to work with you and go back and explain it again, or get you to learn it in a simpler form. And I think I just combined the practice of teaching history and geography and physical education into my coaching.
Mm, And you started coaching at such a young age. So do you think that, were you really good at asking questions and being empathetic at 23, or has that evolved?
No, I wasn't a great teacher then. I was pretty empathetic. I knew who was selfish, who wanted only playing for money in a country team, who were loyal. I picked that up pretty quickly. It developed as I started to work with really successful coaches. And I've been lucky to work with, I think, 15 coaches, won 11 premierships. And I learned from them. We all stand on someone else's shoulders. And I learned things to do and things not to do. I wouldn't do that. Doesn't mean they're wrong, but doesn't suit me. But people like Tommy Hafey, David Park, and Kevin Sheedy, I watched them talk to people. You know, I watched them have conversations with people. Someone like Tommy was an absolute master at forming a relationship away from the sport. All right, and I believe that if you can form a relationship with a player or staff member based on anything other than your business, their family, their farm, where they came from, what their hobbies are, and then use that as a bridge to talk about performance.
It's finding that common ground, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, forming a relationship.
Relationship, yep. Then they'll run over hot coals for you when the going gets tough.
Well, not all of them. You've got to be realistic, and I think I was good at being realistic. It's not a magic wand out there that everybody will respond to. You can, by talking to them, you'll find out those who don't like you.
Yep.
So
not everyone.
And some people need tough love. Some need honey, and some need vinegar.
And the quicker you can know what button to push when is half the battle, isn't it?
Yes.
Off air earlier, you were talking about art and science as it relates to coaching. What were you referring to there?
Well, my belief is that coaching is an art based on a science. The science is the X's and O's and the swimming pools and the gym, which are really important. It's the art of teaching. And the art of people management. And I think the art of teaching is to recognise the great teachable moment. And it means you don't talk all the time. And the art of people management is to listen to them without judgment, although you're internally making a judgment. Let's be realistic here. So the science is important, but the art is the ones, the people who are the artists last, as long as they surround themselves with scientists, right? And the X's and O's. As long as the X's and O's aren't baggage, it's usually the artists that last longest, like Ferguson winning, 12 EPL titles, you know, Lombardi, Belichick, and it comes to an end at some time. If you've got both, you're the package. You know, you're the strategic genius and the great teacher and people manager, but there's very few of them.
Something we can all strive towards to be better at, no doubt about it. So talk to me about skill acquisition. I know over the years I taught A plus B plus C equals D, you know, in a very mechanical skill way. And these days, I do a lot more of the, say, constraints-led approach, or change my teaching, change the rules, change the environment, change the equipment, look for those teachable moments to be able to, for the learning to take place. How has skill acquisition evolved over the years? And, yeah, what are some of the ways that coaches out there can improve in their ability to teach skills?
Well, I'm still trying to learn how to do it well. I think that I did some research, and tennis was a huge influence on me about, for example, the soft skills or the open skills, the skills where you can teach yourself to play tennis a bit, teach yourself to play football, soccer, okay, because there are so many options and so many techniques you can use. So what I learned, and I'm going to Stanford, and I ran into a guy called Bert Robinson, who's absolutely fantastic. He taught decision making. And I realized that all open skills is decision making first, technique second, but not secondary. if you can't deliver the goods, it hasn't been a skillful performance. But the best players in our game, and I've done some study in, you know, European world soccer, are the smartest. And they often have different ways of playing, just like you're imagining golf and tennis, different ways of playing. But if they deliver the goods, that's good enough for me. But it's so we work on the decision making by exposing them to, not exposing them to problems at training, exposing them to ways of solving, different ways of solving that problem, because there are different ways of solving the same problem, and try to find out what they like best or better. So that brought me into decision making, and I really, I think I learned it from a guy in Canadian tennis, and it was that, you know, taught the one forehand, the one backhand, but this person started teaching how to fake someone, how to pick it up off your ankles, and I go, oh, this is good, you know, all the things that really happen in a game. And so in football, I started introducing those principles. These are the options. This is how to give a fake lead. I was interested in sort of exploring the tactical side of the game through decisions. Technically, and I've become very, very interested in goal kicking, and I wrote a book about it during COVID. Goal kicking is like golf a bit, not as much decision-making. Well, it's more technique-based, and any skill that's technique-based can be really difficult to learn. It requires good coaching at the early stages of career, and in our game, virtually no good coaching at early stages of career. There are no qualified goal-kicking coaches out there that have got a degree, and I'm not qualified either, other than I've got a phys ed qualification. So the technique, and it's harder to teach, but what I've learned with technique is that in our sport, you need repeatable precision. You need coaching early on. And for us, not you, you could be replaced by a robot. Some of the shots. And I imagine conversion kicking in American football, you could have a robot come out and do it. So basically, I've always been interested in skill acquisition and trying to find different ways of coaching different individuals. First, you've got to talk to them and see what they can do. And you've got to be realistic. They're not all going to be champions, but you try to improve them.
Yep.
And get them to know about their own skill and what works for them and what doesn't, without feeling embarrassed about what doesn't work.
Have you ever dealt with somebody who had the yips from 20 metres out, straight in front of goals, kicks it and just can't kick it?
Still am. And any sport, any skill that has time to think about failure is difficult. Golf, getting out of the bunker, three-point foul shot, set shot, penalty shot in soccer. Because anxiety, you know, I think there's three thoughts come into it. You know, I got no show. This one, I hope I get it. I'll be very surprised if I miss. So I think personally I was always living in, I hope it goes through. And I think that's where sports psychologists come in, although I've become interested in it, and I've researched around the world what some of the better target shooters, the better golfers, what they think about before. Then I've learned things like, you know, having a repeatable routine, what's your trigger point, how do you start your routine, what, you know, what are the thoughts you might have? Is it the flight of the ball? Is it a intermediary target? You know, what suits you? Is it small target, small miss, the smallest possible target you can get so you have the smallest possible miss? You know, those sort of things. I'm not a sports psychologist, and I think sports psychologists would be really good for technical sports.
So let's talk about philosophy. Let's talk about coaching philosophy. I remember consulting you about, it was around 15 years ago, one of my first presentations in the States. You and I, you gave me an hour of your time. We had coffee together. And ironically, in the Australian Open just gone, I did the same lecture again, but it had evolved slightly. But the principles, ironically, were still the same. So we talk about in coaching philosophy and helping reflect, review, and renew your coaching philosophy. And we spoke about how a coach who can have plenty of methods, but it's the ones who have the solid principles that then are more resilient when tough times are upon us. It's one thing that I spoke about. It's one thing that stays true. It's one thing I learned from you. Could you share a little bit more of your thoughts around that concept about being strong with the principles?
Well, to me, philosophy are the beliefs and principles on which your decisions and actions are based. And if you haven't got a strong philosophy, you'll fall for anything. If it's built on sand, it'll crumble. If it's built on rock, it could stay there. And it's in times of trouble that your philosophy, more than some new trick, will get you out of trouble. But your philosophy needs to evolve because the games evolve, you know, the way we train evolves. But there are some things stood the test of time, you know, about, and that's a personal thing. So in this next coach program that we do is that we have a topic called philosophy. And what I've done over the years is collected a whole lot of different sayings from different people in different categories: criticism, success, failure, teaching, people management. And out of them, we talk about it and we ask the people who do the program, go through and see if there's any that you agree with. You might agree with Lombardi. You might agree with Bill Walsh. You might agree with John Tanner. All right. And usually whenever they say, this is what I believe in, I take the opposite view and say, justify it. You know, how close do you want to be to your players, for example? And that's a good one. And, you know, some people said, I want to be really, really close. And, you know, be friend. I said, they don't need another friend. They don't need someone with them. They want someone to respect. And if they say, well, I like to keep professional distance and, you know, only deal with my sport, I go, what, you're an uncaring person, can't come and talk to you about problems off the field, you know. And I get them, and this is the first time they often think about it. The other one is punctuality. You know, what's your belief on punctuality? You know, if someone's late, should everybody suffer? You know, should they all go for that punishing run? And they say, yeah. I go, that's unfair. What if it's the first time that person's ever been late? What if nothing counts still as a pattern? And they go, oh, yeah. And then if they say, yeah, I wouldn't do it, I go, you're weak. You know, everybody. So I make them try to justify what they're saying. You can see them stammer going, well, because they hadn't really thought about it. These are people who are still playing or just started assistant coaching. Yeah, so philosophy is really, to me, really important, and it should evolve with time. But we all stand on other people's shoulders, as I said before, is that, you know, sometimes I go, what would Tom Hafey do here? What would Kevin Sheedy, what would David Parkin say here? And I often go, and I adopt it as I'm smart and I own it.
It is all about stealing people's ideas, obviously paying credit as well. But that's how we become better coaches. I always say confidence equals time plus experience. We can't short circuit time. We can only short circuit the experience. Mm. But by me having this conversation with you, I'm short circuiting your years of experience to help make me a better coach. I'll take one what I like, or even play devil's advocate. I also encourage our listeners, don't just take what's trendy and what's new and say, this is, you know, yeah, I'm going to adopt this. Play devil's advocate and maybe go even the other way and see what works and explore it and be super curious. So with your program, I know Next Coach Mentor, I know that you've explored a lot of the concepts around peer coaching, having some of the senior players while they're still playing towards the end of their career, but then them actually working with the younger players. What are some of the benefits of peer coaching?
I began this at Geelong in 2007. We ended up playing in three grand finals and won two premierships right there. And the players feel, coaches see. And what I realised that the best content knowledge was in the players. They understood what happened the contest. They understood how nervous you can be in front of goal. Players, the coaches don't. They're quite happy sitting up there with their coffee and having a look or whatever they're doing, not coffee. But so I developed a program, which is, we called it ASD, Advanced Skill Development. And it, the aim was to, for me to teach the players how to teach other players what they knew. And so we divided into special groups, and we would have three groups come out at a time, you know, offensive group, defensive group, midfield group, and then another three groups would come out, and they'd be out for 45 minutes. Another three groups, a goal-kicking group, a ruck group, you know, offensive transition group. And gradually over the 4 years that we did it, we had 32 coaches. And the first year I was there in 2007, Geelong had had an All-Australian selection in the last 7 years twice. It's the same player, Matthew Scala, twice. All right. After the next year when we got it going, we had 12.
Wow.
Because self-esteem went up to get people to teach it. And it wasn't just older players. Some of the younger players, remember Joel Selwood, had only been there a few months and he started taking midfield. But it's not telling the others what they should do, it's telling the others, showing the others, this is what I do. And then I would introduce another midfield coach next semester, and the semester would last about 5 weeks. And the next coach would say, this is how I do it. These are my tricks. So each player could say, well, I want to take that out of Joel and I want to take that out of Jimmy Bartel. So what happened, the self-esteem of the players went through the roof, and, you know, they went on this run of absolute success and a lot of it. They got so confident and they coached out on the ground. They would say, remember what we did on Thursday? You know, and we'd have role play. We'd imitate other teams, you know, with all the idiosyncrasies, with all the humour involved, personally in the scene of other players, you know, and it became good. So that's how I became it's the best teaching I've ever done. And I got out of the way and got the players to teach them, but helping them how to come up with ideas and maybe suggestions of how to teach, just what to teach, but also, you know, teach downwind. You look into the sun, not them. You know, bring everybody in so they could hear, ask questions, don't answer your own question, you know, that sort of thing.
What are your top three tips? I mean, you've got so much wisdom. But if you, you know, even with the program that you run, coaches out there who are really enjoying the journey and perhaps, again, like we said earlier, they've got lots of different methods. If you had to sort of summarise and succinct it down into your top three tips for coaches listening to this, what would you say?
I'd say learn how to teach, and if you can, go and get a teaching qualification. But there are some people who are naturally good teachers. They teach through examples, therefore they, you know, they can teach. They can, you know, they teach through pearls of wisdom. But I think, and the big emphasis in the AFL now is being a teacher, qualified teacher. I think you learn how to teach skill. First of all, you've got to find out what skill is. All right, so that's the scientific part of it, you know. And then basically practice your people management by listening to other people, how they do it, rejecting some of the ways people do it because it's not right in your sense. And think about how to build relationships with players. Some of them will be very close. Some of them will turn out to be lifelong friends. You know, I always mention the great Tommy Hafey, who, before he died, was invited to the weddings of the grandchildren of the players that he coached. You know, he just loved them. His boys. So I couldn't be that close. I couldn't be Tommy Hafey, all right. So I haven't got any, I suppose if I sat down, it gave me a bit longer. But I think, yeah, try to become a qualified teacher or learn to improve your teaching. Teaching is not just telling. Telling is a very, very small part of teaching because players learn by doing mainly, not by listening. What coaches often do is talk. Right. That's my clue. I just thought I'd like to mention the next coach program, if I could, Emma.
Yes, please. Absolutely.
The next program started in 2007 with one person, Adam Simpson, who was playing his last year and wanted to learn about coaching. You wanted to go coaching, he was really keen, right? So I sat down with him and went through some of the topics that I'd presented to the AFL over the years, David Parker and so on, and he just loved it. Right, and I introduced him to some books, and he started listening to them in his car. You know, about Lombardi, When Pride Still Mattered, that was the one he loved, the Lombardi book, where he introduced him to Wooden and Ferguson and these players. And then it spread. So, been going for the last 17 years. At the moment, every fifth coach in the AFL assistant has done the program. And they come out with their own version of it. We've won two premierships. We've got three current head coaches have done the program. And I don't tell them how to coach. There is not one way to coach. All right. But I tell them to think about how they're going to coach and develop their beliefs. And the program's based on principles, not methods. And some of those principles are, you know, what are the principles of strategy? You know, depth and width equals time and space. What's your principle? Your philosophy of being an assistant coach, not the ideal world of what assistant coach is. You know, that there are assistant coaches that are jealous of other assistants. There's the journeyman who just wants a job and doesn't want to go back to working in the bank, loves Hollywood, you know. There's the ambitious one who's really just passing through on their way to a senior coaching position someday, and they're obviously quite outspoken and strong-minded. Then you get me, career second banana, who doesn't want to be a senior coach, but likes to think they added something to the game at some stage or another strategically. And so we talk about, you know, but the principle is loyalty, you know, loyalty to the team and to the other staff. Even if you don't agree with it, you don't go around talking about this, you don't agree with it. All right, but you can argue for your own opinion. But if it keeps being rejected by the head coach, well, read the play. You know, it's that coach, he or she's responsibility and final say. But privileges of we study great coaches around the world and see how they're the same and how they're different. And they have to do an assignment who they would like to be coached by, whether they're alive or dead. All right. And so what they're doing is telling you how they would like to coach. So it's become pretty good. Yeah. So we're starting again next Wednesday. We've already got 18 people who want to do it.
Fantastic.
This year, because they see a job at the end of it. We've got about a 90% appointment rate.
Mm. Yeah. So, everyone, just check out Next Coach Program. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. And finally, David, I want to ask you, what disruptive idea do you think about, or what keeps you awake at night that – you think will impact the way we coach in 2030?
I think it's evolving to teaching through play, which is really good. But it takes more sophisticated, more talented teaching, because anybody can just go and do that drill, that drill, that drill. Oh, geez, I'm doing well. And, you know, good training is ugly, really ugly, because opposition's involved. And you're being forced to cue off the opposition, and you'll make mistakes. I'm a big believer in while you coach the offense, you're also coaching the defense how to beat it. I always remember about Phil Jackson coached his own team to defeat the triangle offense that other teams really struggled how to do it, because if they come up against this. So I enjoy teaching through game-based play, but it requires better coaching, knowing when to shut up, when to talk, not to give 10-minute discussions and lectures, right? When to accept that it didn't work and accept that there are other ways to do it other than the way you thought it should be done, because different players. Technically, yeah, I'm really interested in goal kicking, because I think it's been undercoached. And I'm not bagging other coaches. I think it's gone past where once you played in the forward line, you go and teach how to kick goals, because there's no one way to do it. All right. I think we need people who have a deep knowledge of the mental and the technical factors involved in accuracy sports, They need to know about ball pressure, about air pressure. They need to know about transfer of momentum, action reaction, you know, those sort of things. But again, but teach it, not what they know. Players don't need to know, but some players really do want to know, and the mental side of it. So I'm hoping, you know, 2030 we'll have qualified goal kicking coaches, you know, like Dave Elrod, Wilkinson's coach, PhD in goal, I don't think it's called goal kicking, but in accuracy and sports performance, you know. That's what I think. I'm probably by myself here, but I'd love to see, because I love to see it, because to work in an AFL club now in the fitness and the physiotherapy, you basically got to have a master's or a PhD. But, you know, to work in goal kicking, you don't really have to have any qualification at all. So I don't know what happens in the States, you know, the kicking coaches, I don't know.
I don't either, but I think I might have to get another – I have had one NFL coach on the show, but I might have to – I didn't ask that question, so just a
– I think that'd be advanced. I remember going to Stanford and offering to help, and they said, no way. You know, it breaches the rules. I said, okay. punting. We're offered the help with punting.
Well, I appreciate your feedback. I've already asked you in one, two, a maximum of three words, what makes a great coach? You feature in the book, you said empathy, of course, you said teaching and people management. We hyphenated people management to give you three words. I appreciate so many things about our discussion today. Players feel and coaches see.
I'm going to add one point about coaches see.
Okay, let's do it.
Sometimes a player does need a different view from the balcony, saying, you will need to change your role because I'm seeing that we have a need for this or a need for that, or you're not performing like you did, but I want you in the team, but need to change your role or the way you do it. And that can only be seen, obviously, from above, from outside. All right. And a mentor who can look at the outside and say, yeah, you're a bit more short-tempered than you used to be. You know what I mean? Those sort of things.
Yeah, you know, almost like a mirror reflection.
A mentor tells you things you don't want to hear.
Yeah. Pulls you out on your blind spots.
Yep. But, you know, pumps you up, believes in you, but is honest without being brutal, but tells you in reality, you know, and the reality may be you're going great, fantastic. Yeah.
So what's the difference between a coach and a mentor?
A mentor is someone you look up to, someone you respect, someone who you probably have solid confidence in what they're saying. You don't always have solid confidence in your coach, all right? Someone who's, who you believe in, who you know is on your side. Yeah, there's a great John Wooden thing about what a mentor is. If I find it, I'll text it to you.
Right.
And sometimes mentors are dead.
Yeah.
Wooden's a mentor of mine. He doesn't know it. So is Lombardi. Tommy's a mentor. You know, David Parkin's alive. He's a mentor, you know. And, there's someone whose opinion you value. So, and if you get a coach as a mentor, well, you're very lucky.
Yeah. Fantastic words of wisdom. Listen, ask more questions. Get super curious, everybody, about teaching, skill acquisition, and, of course, review your coaching philosophy as well as the benefits of peer coaching. I think there's so much in what you said today. Thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, and always saying yes to having a cup of coffee with me for the rest of my life because I just love chatting with you. And, of course, I adore your daughter, Sarah, and I are still very close today. So thank you, David, for being on the Coaching Podcast.
Thank you. You should be very proud of what you've done, Emma.
Thank you. Thank you. It was from day one, I was inspired that with the two Davids in my life right then and there, I was like, this, I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. So I appreciate you.
The other David's done a bit more than me.
Nah, you both got wisdom.
I ran into him down the street at Lawn the other day.
Oh, awesome.
David.
Yeah, lovely. Fantastic. Well, everyone, we'll have to invite David Parker to come on the show. I haven't yet had him on, so putting it out there today. Also, just appreciate everyone for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a fellow coach and catch you all next time. Bye for now.
The Coaching Podcast is sponsored by Transition Coach for Athletes, a global coaching, mentoring, and US college sporting scholarship placement service. The service helps athletes navigate the often challenging world of choosing your best college fit while maximizing sports performance. Visit www.transitioncoachforathletes.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating review on your podcast listening device. And don't forget to tell a fellow coach about the show. The ball is in your court to take action and enjoy your coaching.